ever come. Well, I remember when I was just children, a time when people used to treat their neighbors like a fellow man. Them all day singing and them big prayer meeting, when a man was proud to walk up, he shake his neighbor's hand. Lord, you talk about the good times.
Well, it's February 16th, and you're listening to the Jason Kirtman Show, and we're here to talk about the good times. I don't know if you can tell in my voice a little bit, but I'm struggling and trying to get over a cold right now, but that's all right because I'm still enjoying the music, I'm still enjoying the roads, and I'm still enjoying life, and I'm enjoying being here with you. So check me out at my website, jasonkirtman.com. That's C-U-R-T-M-A-N. And you can listen to some of the old shows there or engage in our chat room there. And today's show is pre-recorded. That's all right because I've got some good stuff for you. Really, really good stuff coming up. And today's show is just going to be full of surprises. I guarantee it. Just you wait and see. Hey, let's start off. We're going to slow down a little bit here and go on to something else. Here's a little bit of Elvis Presley trying to get to you. Here's a new track that I just got. It's an old track, though. I've never heard of this guy, Phil Harris, singing Southern Fried Boogie. He's singing about one of my favorite meals.
There's a certain dish they always make in the South, and when you eat it, boy, you find it melts in your mouth. Now I'm the guy who ought to know how good it can be, 'cause my mammy always used to make it for me, and it's that Southern fried chicken I'm raving about. It's the kind of food that I just can't do without. Now here's the recipe, try it and you'll see, when you serve it, everyone will say, Mmm.
butcher for a chicken, he'll do the rest. Tell him what you're cooking and he'll send you the best. Clean off all the feathers and the nothing but skin. Cut it into pieces and you're set to begin making southern fried chicken that's fit for a king. Pass another plate, well look at that, there's a wing. Here's the recipe, try it and you'll see. When you serve it, everyone will say, woo! Some flour you have added seasoning to. Roll the chicken in it and then here's what you do. Fry it all in deep fat until people appear. Well, they're sniffing and they're saying, what you cooking in here? They'll be glad when you show them that chicken a rough. Pass the plate again, son, I just can't get enough. Well, here's the recipe, try it and you'll see. When you serve it, everyone will say, ah! You got the recipe, so why hesitate? Try the southern dish and man, you'll say that it's great. Serve it with potatoes, make them french fried, you know. And don't leave out old chicken, he's the star of the show. Cause it's southern fried chicken this recipe's for. Don't pass me that plate, son, I can't eat anymore. Well, I'll try maybe one more gizzard.
It's February 16th. I'm Jason Kirtman, and this is the History File. Born today in 1903, Edgar Bergen. Also today in 1935, singer and politician Sonny Bono. Born today in 1957, actor LeVar Burton. And in 1958, rapper Ice-T. On this day in history in 1568, the entire population of the Netherlands was sentenced to death by the Roman Catholic Church for heresy. Today in 1862, during the American Civil War, Union General Ulysses S. Grant captured Fort Donelson, Tennessee. And today in 1883, the Ladies' Home Journal began its publication. On this day in history, in 1918, Lithuania declared its independence from both Russia and Germany. Today in 1934, the Austrian Civil War came to an end. And in 1937, Wallace C. Carruthers received a patent for nylon. Today in 1950, What's My Line debuted on CBS. And today in 1959, Fidel Castro was sworn in as Prime Minister of Cuba. Today in 1968, the first 911 emergency service in the United States went into effect in Haleyville, Alabama. Today in 1979, the Bee Gees won a Grammy Award for their album, Saturday Night Fever. Today in 1997, Jeff Gordon became the youngest person to win the Daytona 500 at age 25. In 2005, the NHL announced the cancellation of the 2004-2005 season due to a labor dispute. And today, in 2006, the last Mobile Army Surgical Hospital, otherwise known as a MASH unit, was decommissioned by the United States Army. It's February 16th, and that is your History File.
If I see you tomorrow on some street in town, pardon me if I don't say hello. I belong to another. It wouldn't look so good to know someone I'm not supposed to know. Just walk on by, wait on the corner. I love you, but we're strangers when we meet. Just walk on by, wait on the corner. I love you, but we're strangers when we meet. In a dimly lit corner at a place outside of town, tonight we'll try to say goodbye again. But I know it's not over. I'll call tomorrow night. I can't let you go, so why pretend? Just walk on by. street on the corner. I love you, but we're strangers when we meet. Just walk on by, wait on the corner. I love you, but we're strangers when we meet. I love you, but we're strangers when we meet.
Well, I've seen this restaurant on the Food Channel and a few other channels talking about the Heart Attack Grill. Their slogan is, "A taste worth dying for." John Aylman, 52, whose regular visits to the Heart Attack Grill in Las Vegas had led to his being adopted as the restaurant's unofficial spokesman, and he collapsed and died of a heart attack while waiting for a bus outside the grill. Its previous unofficial spokesman, who weighed 575 pounds, died of pneumonia in 2011 at the age of 29. Last year, a man in his 40s was taken to the hospital after sweating and shaking while he was eating a 6,000-calorie triple bypass burger at the grill. He did survive. I have a website. It's www.heartattackgrill.com. I love hamburgers just as much as the next guy, but wow, really, a taste worth dying for. All right, I've got a little treat for you now, something that we haven't ever played here before. We might play it every now and then. This is from a long time ago. Here we go.
James Stewart as the Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother-of-pearl. The handle unmarked. But the gun has killed and the man has killed. People call them both the Six Shooter. Presenting one of the screen's favorite stars, Mr. James Stewart as the Six Shooter. Based on the timeless legend of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who brought single-handed justice to the Western Territories.
I had figured on going through Clay City. It was an hour out of my way, and I was already a day late to the Jefferson Ranch where I'd signed on for the roundup. But when Scar started limping from a loose shoe, didn't have no choice. We had to head for the nearest blacksmith shop, so we turned north.
Losing a shoe.
Well, let's have a look. All right, raise it up, fella. Come on, boy. It's split, mister. He needs a new one. Okay, boy.
Can you take care of it?
Oh, sure. Bring him over here.
Hey, what happened to Red, fella used to own this shop?
Went to Nevada chasing silver. I bought him out.
You don't look very much like a blacksmith, huh?
Oh, I'm stronger than I look. Heavier, too. What do you think I weigh, mister?
Oh, I don't know.
Go on, take a guess. 120?
30? Well, no more than that.
You a betting man, mister?
Well, sometimes.
Well, I say I weigh over 130. If I don't, you get the new shoe for nothing. If I do, you pay me double. What do you say?
You got a set of scales?
Don't need no scales. What do you say, mister? Is it a bet?
Well, don't seem to be no way of proving it.
Oh, all you got to do is lift me up. Now, you look like a man who can judge weight. What do you say?
Okay, all right, it's a bet.
All right, mister, just heist me. If you don't think I weigh more than 130, the shoe is free.
I never tried to judge a man's weight before, but all right. There we go.
Well?
Oh, I'll be dog.
I'm packed solid, mister, real solid.
You're packed tighter than a steer. You must weigh 150 pounds.
Yeah, you see, what did I tell you? 158. The horseshoe's gonna cost you money, mister, but you ain't the only one. Ever since I bought the shop, there ain't been a stranger come through Clay City but what he paid double for his first horseshoe. You ain't sore, mister?
No, No, it was a fair bet.
Sure it was. I told you I was heavier than I looked. That's what folks call me, Heavy Norton. My real name's George, but everybody calls me Heavy. What's your name, mister?
Ponsett. Britt Ponsett.
Fella they call the six-shooter? Well, doggone it. I've heard about you, mister. I've sure heard about you. Oh, would have recognized you if I'd have noticed your gun. Sure is fancy, ain't it? Hey, do you mind showing it to me?
No. Here, catch.
Real fancy. Just like Sheriff Schofield said. He says he's seen you fire six shots with it while Whitey Jackson was getting off his first bullet that time down at Eagle.
Well, the sheriff kind of likes to build up a story.
Oh, he swears it's the truth. Here's your gun, Mr. Ponsett. Thanks.
Sure.
You was mighty quick in getting into Clay City. How'd you hear about it so fast?
Well, hear about what?
The holdup at the Fargo station last night. Ain't that why you come?
No. I was headed past town. I turned off because Scar got that loose shoe.
Well, now, ain't that a coincidence? Fellow holds up the Fargo office, kills one man, maybe two, gets away with $5,000, and 12 hours later, you ride into town.
Well, they got any idea who did it?
Nope, not a single solitary one, from what I hear. Like I say, the deputy agent was dead when they found him. Other fella, Fred Wilmer, a friend of his, got shot up pretty bad. Ain't done no talking yet. Doc says maybe he never will.
Did Sheriff Schofield take out a posse?
Nope, ain't nobody to go. Most of the men signed up for the Jefferson Roundup. Left town day before yesterday. Hear the Jefferson Ranch is paying good money this year.
Yeah. You seen the sheriff this morning?
No, not lately. Might be over to his office.
I think I'll walk down that way while you're fixing up Scar.
Sure, Mr. Ponsett. That's a darn good idea. Sheriff Schofield will be real glad to see you.
Couple of doors this side of the sheriff's office, I saw the Wells Fargo sign nailed up next to a window. Place wasn't locked, so I went inside. One of the chairs was upset, and there was some damp stains on the floor. The cast iron safe against the wall was standing wide open, so I kicked it shut. Went out in the back stoop. There was some more blood on the steps, and then just red mud. Right at the edge, I saw the hoof prints. They trailed off along the side of the creek. Whoever made them headed west. The horse had been wearing one shoe different from the other three. A sharp rock must have cut into it sometime or other. Not enough to split it, you understand. Just enough so that the print left a jagged line, like fancy handwriting.
Find something, Britt?
Hmm? Oh, hello, Sheriff. I was heading your way.
Yeah, I just saw Heavy. He told me you was in town. Did you find something?
I don't know. You see these hoof prints?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Don't mean nothing. Trail gives out a mile or so down a creek at Fork.
Uh-huh. Has Clay City had any other trouble lately yet?
No, not a bit. I guess any town's got to expect to hold up once in a while, though.
No, I heard it was a little more than that.
Yeah, that's right.
Fred Wilmer able to talk yet?
Afraid not. Doc said he'd let me know first thing he'd come around. Took him out to his ranch.
You been out there to see him since last time?
Wasn't no reason.
Well, it might be a good idea to be there, you know, just in case.
Thought maybe I ought to stick in town.
Oh, I don't think anything more is going to happen here, Ed. I'll get Scar. I'll meet you out at Fred's place. Huh?
I can handle this alone, Britt.
Oh, sure. I'll just offer to keep you company, Ed.
I'll meet you there.
He's all fixed up, Mr. Ponsett. Tied him up around the side so he'd be in the shade.
Thanks, Harvey. Thank you.
Did you find Sheriff Schofield? I told him you was in town.
Yeah.
You figure out anything?
Well, not so far.
Oh, you will. Sheriff's a good man. Why, you and him together, you'll get whoever done it.
Well, maybe so. You're the only blacksmith round here, ain't you, Heavy?
Only one for 40 miles.
Uh-huh. You ever see a horse with a shoe that's got one jagged edge, left hind leg?
A lot of shoes got jagged edges, Mr. Ponsett.
Yeah, but I'll show you what I mean. I ain't much of an artist. Now, here, it kind of looks a little like this.
Seems to me I seen a shoe like that just the other day. Oh, sure, I remember. Told him he ought to get a new one for it. Ben Schofield, that's who it was, just the other day.
Ben?
The sheriff's kid. You know him, don't you, Mr. Ponsett?
Oh, sure. Sure, I ain't seen Ben in a couple of years, though.
You wouldn't recognize him if you did. He just sort of growed up overnight.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess he has. That ends the first act of The Six Shooter, folks. Hope you're enjoying the show. Before we get on with it, I'd like to tell you a little bit about how I happen to be doing this program. I've been lucky enough to do quite a bit of radio acting before, but I've never had a program of my own. The right thing just didn't seem to come along, at least not until The Six Shooter. You see, I've made several stories of this kind for pictures. That is, honest, legitimate stories of the West, and I hope that this series can offer the same type of enjoyment with the same integrity. We think it's the sort of program the whole family will enjoy, and we think that the character of Britt Ponsett typifies some of the greatness that built America. We'd be pleased if you agreed with us.
Starring Jimmy Stewart.
Sheriff Schofield was sitting on Fred Wilmer's porch swing when I got there. Doc was inside with Fred, so I squatted down on the stoop and waited. About half an hour, the doc came out and told us we could go inside and see Fred. Fred was lying on a cot, breathing hard. White cloth across his chest was stained pink, and his voice sounded like it was full of air.
Just sitting in the express office talking. Sam and me didn't hear the back door open. Must have left it unlocked. Turned around and there he was, holding his gun on us.
Did you get a look at him, Fred?
Handkerchief over his face, Sheriff. I couldn't see nothing. Just the gun. They told Sam to open the safe. There wasn't nothing else he could do.
Sure, sure.
He took the money, walked over to the door.
Yeah.
Looked at us for a minute, and then shot. Didn't have no reason. He hit Sam in the face and hit me in the chest. He didn't have no reason.
Take it easy, Fred. Take it easy now.
It's just like he enjoyed shooting at us. That's how it was, like he enjoyed it.
Maybe he was scared.
Oh, he wasn't scared, Sheriff. He didn't have no reason. Thought he killed us both. Then he started down the steps. I got my hand on the shotgun and let him have it.
You hit him?
I don't know. Maybe he gave a yell and rode off.
What kind of a fellow was he? Was he young, old?
I couldn't see his face. Young fellow, I'd say, though.
How young?
17, 18, full grown.
Was he tall, short?
Medium. About the size of your kid, Ed. About that size.
Got enough for you, Ed?
Yeah, that's enough.
You think you'll get him, Brent?
Sure, Fred. Sure. Sure. Come on, Ed.
Didn't have no reason to shoot, no reason at all.
Wasting our time, Brett. He's got a day's head start. He'd be 40 miles from here.
Well, not if he shot up.
Now, you go on if you want to.
Well, you're the sheriff. You've got to make the arrest.
You ain't never been so particular before.
Well, maybe not, but this time I'm particular. You coming?
We don't even know where to start.
Oh, I thought along the creek. That's as good a place as any other.
It's a waste of time, Brett.
Oh, we got time to waste. Come on, let's go. We picked up the trail along the creek headed west. It wasn't hard to follow, and every once in a while we'd see a few drops of blood spattered against the shrub brush. About 10 minutes later, we came to a fork where Ed had said the trail gave out. So
Scar stuck his nose down into the water, and I looked around. The trail didn't give out. It turned south. I nodded in that direction. Ed didn't say a thing. Just followed. At about 5 o'clock, we stopped to eat. Ed built a fire, and I opened up a couple of cans of beans I had in my roll. Oh, you ain't hungry, Ed?
It's early for supper.
Yeah, yeah. Ed, I talked to Heavy before I went out to Fred's place. I asked him who had a horse that would leave a mark like the one we've been following.
So?
And he said Ben did. Your son, Ben. I thought you ought to know that.
A lot of horseshoes leave the same kind of mark.
Fred said it was a young fella.
It wasn't Ben.
Where is he, Ed?
Jefferson's ranch, working on a roundup. He left Clay City day before yesterday. Couldn't be Ben. There's a lot of wild youngsters in these parts, but Ben's a good boy. Couldn't be him.
You sure?
That mark don't mean nothing. Plenty of horseshoes leave the same kind of mark. You know that, Britt.
You had enough to eat?
Yeah.
Come on, let's go. But enough so you could follow the trail. For about 3 miles, there wasn't no blood. He must have wrapped something around the wound. Wrapped it real tight. And then we found the bandage. A piece of shirt tail sopped through. For the next mile, he'd been bleeding a lot, worse than ever. He was hit pretty bad.
Looks like it.
He couldn't have gone much further because... Hold it, Scar. Ed.
Yeah.
Hold on. Over there in the gully, that cabin.
Yeah.
Whose is it?
Used to belong to Jake Levant. Died a couple of years ago. Ain't nobody living there now.
There's somebody living there.
Huh?
Out in back. There's a pony. Better go ahead on foot.
Britt?
Yeah?
We're gonna take him alive, ain't we?
If we can.
We gotta take him alive, Britt.
It's Ben.
I don't know, Britt. Not for sure.
It could be Ben?
It could be.
Where have you been the last couple of days?
I don't know that neither. Had an argument with him 2 nights ago. He needed some money. He'd been playing poker and lost a lot.
$5,000's a lot.
I wouldn't give him money. Got mad, said he'd get it, said he'd get it himself. And I hit him hard across the face. I hit him twice. He started to hit me back. Then he walked out of the house. I ain't seen him since. I wish he had hit me back.
Now, we gotta get across that clearing, Ed. Over to that clump of trees.
He may see us.
Yeah, we'll have to take that chance. You ready?
Yeah.
Stay in these trees for a couple of minutes.
Okay.
And then we'll rush him. Ain't gonna be easy to take him, Ed. Now that he's spotted us.
You ain't gonna kill him, Britt.
I ain't gonna let him kill me.
It ain't his fault, Britt. It's mine.
You know that ain't so.
No, it's the truth. It's my fault.
You didn't raise him to be a killer, Ed.
Maybe I did, Britt. I was the sheriff, seeing that everybody kept close to the line, seeing that everybody lived honest, especially Ben. I broke him, Britt. Broke him like you break a wild horse. I try to take all the fight out of him fast. You know what happens when you do that to a horse? He gets tame, but the fight's still there, and someday he turns wild again.
I'll rush him alone, Ed.
No. Stay here, Britt.
Well, Sam Norton's dead. Maybe Fred Miller, too.
Killing Ben won't bring him back. He's my son, Britt, my only son. You don't have no kids. You don't know.
I'm sorry, Ed.
No, we're going back to town.
Not without him.
We're going back. Now, you can outdraw me, Britt, but I'll still have time to get a shot off.
I'll try to get him alive, Ed. I'll try.
No, don't turn your back on me, Britt. Don't be a fool. Don't make me do it, Britt.
I wasn't being brave. I knew he wouldn't shoot. A man like Ed Schofield just don't change overnight. You can figure a man like Ed. That's what I thought, anyway. But I hadn't figured what would happen next. I haven't figured on him running out into the clearing, standing there in the moonlight, gray against the black sky.
Ben! It's me, Ben, your dad! Can you hear me, Ben? Brett Ponson's coming after you. Throw out your gun, Ben. Brett Ponson's coming. Now listen to me, Ben. It's your dad.
I saw him go down real slow, like his legs had buckled under him. I couldn't tell how bad he'd been hit. He rolled down a gully out of range, and I crawled forward. I pushed myself past a couple of rocks and head toward the back door. The kid was in the kitchen. I couldn't see him, but I could hear him moving around, going from window to window, looking out, waiting for me. I slid past another rock. I could run for the door or wait. The kid made up a mind for me. I slipped down fast, and the bullets nicked the rocks. The kid had good hearing. He knew I was right there. I took out my gun and waited. I knew he'd get nervous first. Young fellas always do. I wasn't so young. I could wait. It was more than 5 minutes before the door started opening. His pony knew I was coming, too. He started for the horse. I aimed at his leg. For a second, he stopped moving and just hung in midair like a hawk. Then he sprawled forward out of sight behind a log. I raised up a little and hunched myself along the side of the cabin. Everything was quiet now, even his pony. The moon went behind a thick cloud, and I came around the corner of the cabin. Suddenly, the moon came out again, just in time for me to see his .45, just in time to see him coming up over the top of the log. His revolver slipped out of his fingers, and I saw him trying to reach for it again. He couldn't make it. I stood up and walked over to the log. The kid was lying face down, gasping for breath, little short gasps. He pulled himself onto the flat of his hands, and then he passed out. I turned him over with my foot, and I looked at his face. Ed? Ed?
Over here.
Where'd he get you?
In the shoulder. I'm gonna be all right. Britt, is he... Did you have to...
He ain't dead.
Thanks. I guess he didn't hear me calling to him. He didn't know who I was.
Ed.
What?
Ed, it ain't Ben.
What?
It ain't Ben, Ed.
You sure, Britt?
Yeah, this kid's got red hair.
There ain't no reason to lie to me, Britt. I ain't shot up bad.
I ain't lying. I knew it wasn't Ben while I was going up after him. I knew it.
What are you talking about?
Hey, just come to me. A man don't change overnight. Neither does a boy.
Well, if it ain't Ben...
Lots of tough kids in these parts. You said so yourself.
Where do you suppose Ben is?
Where you said. Jefferson Ranch, working in the roundup. They pay good. Now, a boy don't change overnight, Ed. Is he able to ride back to town?
Yeah, sure. I may have to take it a little slow.
I'll get the kid.
Britt.
Yeah?
You know something, Britt? I couldn't believe it was Ben, neither. Not when he shot me. I just couldn't believe it. You know that, Britt?
I know it, Ed. I know it. That was your first meeting with Britt Ponsett. I hope you'd like to meet him again every week. And I also hope you'll try our product. It's something I use myself, and it's never let me down. I don't think it'd let you down either. Maybe I'm not much of a salesman, but this product I don't think needs a lot of selling. As far as I'm concerned, it sells itself. So, I'd appreciate it if you'd buy it this week and give it a try. Let me know how you like it. So long, folks. We'll be seeing you.
Well, that was an old episode of The Six Shooter starring James Stewart. And I don't know about you, but I enjoyed that. Brought back a lot of memories of radio shows and television shows that I used to listen to.
Hank B., Frank Myers ain't the only one that's got interest in collector's items. I got one for you, too.
What is it?
A box of brand new Post Oat Flakes, the cereal that tastes like oatmeal cookies.
And, Dave?
I wouldn't be surprised if in 100 years from now there was a plaque here saying, on this site, B. Taylor was presented with the first box of the first flakes made with oats.
And, Dave?
And presenting those Post Oat Flakes that gives you the strength of oats was her nephew, Andrew Taylor. I was able to get this box because I know the sponsor.
Well, I know him, too.
Me, too.
Well, we've all got them. Start your day a little bit better with brand new Post Oat Flakes that taste like oatmeal cookies. Good. I appreciate it, and good night.
Television viewers in Montana were surprised when programs were interrupted with an emergency broadcast warning them of a zombie apocalypse. The broadcast, made by hackers who had broken into the emergency alert system of the network, told of dead bodies rising from their graves and attacking the living, and warned viewers not to approach or tackle them as they were extremely dangerous. Despite the worrying nature of the report, only 4 people are confirmed to have called the police to ask if it was true. I haven't seen any zombies, have you? You know what I like to do when I'm putting together the Jason Kirkman Show? You're not going to believe this, but it gets me in the mood for this vintage entertainment, vintage fun, music, comedy, old radio shows. I like to get me a frosty mug of root beer and sit back and sip on it and enjoy it, because it really does. It gets me in the mood. It takes me back to old times at Grandma and Grandpa Gibson's house, when the root beer was plentiful, as was the Dr. Pepper, and Grandpa was always pulling out his old Polaroid instant camera to take pictures of the grandkids. And boy, did those old picture albums just got thicker and thicker and thicker and more abundant every year. Up until last year, in August of, it was actually the year before last, August of 2000, August of 2011. And I sure do miss Grandpa Gibson. I got to go back to St. Louis for the funeral. And I've got to say, it's one of the best funerals I've ever been to. Celebration of life. And Grandpa was such a godly man and a true American patriot. And I miss him and love him dearly. We'll be right back right after this.
I didn't believe this when I read it, but the Kerry, Ireland City Council voted this last January to let some people drive drunk. The councilors reasoned that in the county's isolated region, some seniors live alone and need the camaraderie of the pub, but they fear a DUI arrest on the way home. The councilors thus empowered police to issue DUI permits? Yeah, that's right, DUI permits to those targeted drivers. Besides, reasoned the councilors, the area is so sparsely populated that these drivers hardly ever encounter anyone else on the road at night anyway. Might also have something to do that several of those that voted yay on this owned the local pubs. No conflict of interest there, huh?
Makes no difference now what kind of life fate hands me. I'll get along without you now, it's plain to see. I don't care what happens next, for I'll get by somehow. I don't worry, 'cause it makes no difference now. It was just a year ago that I first met you. I learned to love you, and I thought you loved me too. But now that's all in the past, and I'll forget somehow. I don't worry, 'cause it makes no difference now. Have really parted, I can't believe we're through. I don't blame myself, and I'm sure I can't blame you. There was something had to happen, and it happened somehow. I don't worry, 'cause it makes no difference now. After all is said and done, I'll soon forget you. Although I know that it will be so hard to do. Let things happen as they will, and I'll get by somehow. I don't worry, 'cause it makes no difference now.
That was Gene Autry with It Makes No Difference Now. Hey, here's a oldie goodie, oldie but goodie with Flat and Scruggs. It's the story of Bonnie and Clyde.
The story of Bonnie and Clyde is a story the old folks knew. The story of Bonnie and Clyde, if you listen, I'll tell it to you. Clyde Barrow wouldn't work, so he chopped off his toe in a Huntsville prison where he got his parole. Then he traveled to Dallas where he found him a friend. It was Miss Bonnie Parker, and that's where it all began. They found them a driver for their getaway Ford. They were soon well known through a dozen states or more. Then Clyde's brother Buck and his pretty wife Blanche joined them and that made up the famous Barrow Gang. Bonnie Parker was a poet and Blanche Barrow was a cook. Hyde was a fast draw and Buck a smarter crook. Their driver was a wonderful mechanic, so they say, and soon they were all famous in their own peculiar way. The stories were so many that you couldn't read them all. The legend grew and grew about the Barrows and the Law. The Barrow Gang swept through the land and many were their friends, but pretty soon they realized the law was closing in. Out near Dexter Highway they had a change of flow. In a gunfight with police, Clyde lost his brother Buck. But Clyde and Bonnie got away the second time that year. Bonnie wrote her poems and she knew the end was near. At 9:15 on May the 23rd and 34th, near Shreveport, Louisiana, death was knocking at the door. Clyde Barrow and Miss Bonnie Parker came to meet a friend and realized too late that they had come to meet their end. The story of Bonnie and Clyde, they died as they lived by the gun. The story of Bonnie and Clyde, their names are remembered as one.
Staff at a military hospital in Turkey say that a man has been cured of his clinical vampirism after 2 years of treatment. The patient is a 23-year-old man who had begun drinking his own blood before moving on to stabbing and biting others in order to drink their blood. He emerges from his blood-craving states with no memory whatsoever of what he's done. Doctors say the clinical vampirism is a combination of post-traumatic stress disorder and dissociative identity disorder brought on by the death of his 4-year-old daughter and also witnessing a friend kill a man by cutting off his head. These vampires, we got to worry about zombies and now we got to worry about vampires? Really?
Out on a double date, me and Edith, you and Kate. Before we got past their front gate, there you were making eyes at Edith while you were making time with Kate. You can't have your Kate and Edith too, you rascal, you a little lady too. Then we went to a driving show, you were kissing on Kate, she wouldn't let you go. I looked at Edith, started feeling bold. I found your big hairy hand holding on to the hand I was trying to hold. You can't have your Kate and Edith too, you rascal, you a little lady too. Edith asked me if I would get her some popcorn. I said I would. When I got back, Dad blamed a few and crawled into the back seat with Edith and Kate was back there too. You can't have your Kate and Edith too, you rascal, you a little lady too. Years have passed since that first day. I married Edith, you married Kate. Now every night when I come home, driveway, cakes in the car, and you and Edith in the house alone. You can't have your Kate and Edith too, you rascal, you a little lady too.
How much has sarcasm cost you in the past? More than a jar of peanut butter? Just ask the man who's suing authorities at a New York airport after being arrested for making a joke about explosives located in, of all things, his peanut butter. Probably not a wise thing to do. Frank Hannibal, age 50, was talking to his wife and two children as transport security staff at LaGuardia Airport were examining his jar of peanut butter. when he said, "They're looking to confiscate my explosives." He was overheard by security personnel who called the police, and they arrested him on a felony charge of falsely reporting an incident. Hannibal was held in jail for 25 hours before the district attorney decided not to prosecute. Hannibal's lawyer was quoted as saying, "It's a sorry state of affairs in this country when sarcasm is considered a felony." Yeah, I would agree with that.
There's a city that looks for the valley of death, and the glory there has never yet been told. How I long for that city where there never comes a night. It's a beautiful city of gold, where the sun never sets, and the leaves never fade, and the righteous forever will shine like the stars in that beautiful city of gold. There will be no more sorrow, pain, sickness, nor death, and the saints, they will never grow old. I long for that city where the Lamb of God's the light, in that beautiful city of gold, where the sun in my beautiful city of gold.
Early to rise because age is just a number. At age one, future jazz great Buddy Rich started drumming professionally as part of his parents' vaudeville act. That's right, just age one. At age three, Mozart learned to play his first instrument, the harpsichord. At age 5, future rock star Tori Amos was accepted to the Peabody Academy of Music in Baltimore, its youngest student ever. At age 6, Shirley Temple became Hollywood's top box office star, and she remained there at number 1 until she was the very old age of 9. At age 13, Mario Andretti started racing cars. At age 14, Buffalo Bill Cody became a writer for the Pony Express. At age 23, Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg became the youngest billionaire in history. Age is just a number.
That's right, age is just a number. And with that in mind, I'd like to give everybody out there a challenge for this week. You know, I like to do that at the end of the week. And it's just something so broad and so general and yet so spiritual, so soulful, and so good. That challenge comes via the Statesman Quartet song that I'm going to play for you now, and it's as simple as just brightening the corner where you are.
Do not wait until some deed of greatness you may do. Do not wait to shed your light afar. To the many duties ever near you now be true. Move and brighten the corner where you are. Brighten the corner. Shine for Jesus where you are, brighten the corner where you are. Someone far from the harbor you may guide across the bar. I won't brighten the corner where you are.
Just above the clouded skies that you may help to clear, let not narrow shelter way debar. Though into one heart alone made for your song of cheer, brighten the corner where you are.
Brighten the corner.
You're listening to The Jason Kurtman Show at jasonkurtman.com. What will you do this week to brighten the corner where you are? Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next week, right here, this same channel, this same station, this same show with this same Jason.